pack your bags, start the car, and get on the road. It's time to go across the country, 2 minutes at a time, for the biggest stories of the day, where they're happening.
Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
Indianapolis, Indiana.
Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
Cleveland, Ohio.
Boston, Mass.
Miami, Florida.
It's the 2 minute drill on the program.
Second half of the program begins right now. Our 2 minute drill brought to you by Joslin's Jewelry. Right there at 95th and Antioch, Gary Joslin and his staff, absolutely the best. If you're looking for that important, maybe most important, should be most important, jewelry purchase you can make, an engagement ring, they've got thousands to choose from right there at 95th and Antioch. Online at joslinsjewelry.com. More than 40 years in business. That is Joslin's Jewelry. Go see Gary and his great staff today. Let's get things started. We'll go to Chicago, Illinois. Our buddy Mark Carman, WGN and CHGO Sports in Chicago, is there. Mark, how are you, sir?
Seren, how are you? Happy, I don't know. And let's go NFL Draft Week. Let's stay with that.
Happy Draft Day. We'll take it. Happy Draft Day to you, Mark. Tell me, is it just boring when you have the number one pick and it's already been decided who it's going to be and only four total picks? Or does the fact that, pick number nine is also the Bears, does that make this exciting?
The nine thing actually has got Chicago very much excited about what the Bears are going to do. Stick and pick, trade down, trade up. You know, the four quarterbacks going first four picks of the draft could be super interesting with a guy like Marvin dropping. Would the Bears go up to get him? I doubt it, but I certainly am intrigued by the concept. And then the other side, trade down, take one of the linemen and do something less sexy but probably effective.
So what do they need? What should they be getting at number nine?
Well, look, you've got DJ Moore and you've got Keenan Allen, but Keenan Allen's 32 years old and DJ Moore's got 1 year left in his contract after this year. So you could certainly make a strong argument that they could use a wide receiver to pair with Caleb. That would be easy to go. But you could use a three tech. You could use an edge rusher. And you certainly could use help on the offensive line. I mean, the Bears weren't a bad football team last year. They won seven games. So Caleb's coming into a much better situation for most people, getting selected one overall. But they do have needs all over the field.
Is anybody doubting Caleb Williams or is everybody on board?
I don't think anyone's doubting him, sir, and very few. I mean, I guess, Dan Orlovsky's got Jaden Daniels as the top quarterback, and he's not alone. But I don't know, man. If this guy doesn't make it, it's going to be the Bears fans will come out of it thinking we will never, ever, ever find a quarterback if this guy doesn't hit.
All right. Bulls are out. They fall in the playoff round, even without the Heat having Jimmy Butler on the floor. First of all, let's start there. What is the future with this team? I mean, Kentucky was said to be interested in Billy Donovan. He didn't end up taking that job or was never offered that job. And this team seems to be very meh for like the umpteenth year in a row. Where's it going with the Bulls?
Well, one thing that's going to happen is they're going to do everything within their power to trade Zach LaVine. But his market is going to be so little that they're basically going to be trying to give him away. And I don't know where that leaves you because they want to re-sign DeMar DeRozan. And they want to bring back Patrick Williams as a restricted free agent. And they want to rework the team. I don't know how you're doing that if you're bringing all those guys back, right? And then you're well into the luxury tax for a team that's been in the play in the last 2 years, which is not ideal. So, I mean, there's a lot of talk right now about, reworking things, but I think it's going to be pretty hard to orchestrate. And my guess is the Bulls are going to be a very similar situation next year they've been in the last two.
Is Billy Donovan going anywhere?
No. Although, sir, when that became available at Kentucky, people were like, yeah, he wants to stay in the NBA. I'm like, really? Because he's got to know the Bulls are going nowhere. And here's a chance for a level-headed guy who I think can handle all the heat of being elected to be started out as an assistant coach there. I thought he would have been extremely interested. It just didn't seem like Kentucky offered him. So I thought that thing was going to advance further, but it just didn't.
All right. We know the White Sox are going nowhere, but are we buying in on the Cubs and their start to the season, 13-9, second place right now?
It's a soft buy. Let's go with soft buy. They've got some closer issues. Albert Elsley's blown four saves already. Kyle Hendricks is showing his age. He looks like he's going to get dumped from the rotation after a couple more turns here if he doesn't find it. And their lineup has been effective, though. It's not exactly there. I mean, there's no star power on the Cubs, Seren, but they are winning games, and they could have won a lot more games already. So I think they're most definitely, you know, in there. In a very competitive, though, NL Central. I mean, you know, Milwaukee's played well. The division's been, you know, pretty solid.
Yeah, it has. We'll see if they, you know, who's still standing in the end. But all of a sudden, it seems like, oh, maybe we should spend some money. Like, maybe we should go after this because we're right here. I don't know. I find the Cubs, you know, they have so much money coming in, but they don't seem to be willing to spend with the big boys. I don't get it. It perplexes me, but, yeah. I, you know.
You speak truth, young man.
Thank you.
Yes.
Mark Carman in Chicago. Great stuff as always. We appreciate it. Have a great week, my friend.
You too, sir. Be good. Thank you.
And in Phoenix, Arizona, we drink way too much Corona.
Says Luke Lipinski, Arizona Sports 98.7. Luke, how are you, sir? Let me try. Hang on. Wrong button. Now I got the right button. Now how are you, Luke?
I'm even better now.
Yeah.
How are you doing?
Yeah, we're better for sure. Listen, did anyone even notice the Coyotes left?
Yeah, you know, it was rough. There is a huge hockey community down here just because there's 6 million people here. But they're not all necessarily Coyotes fans. You got a lot of Blackhawks fans, and you got a lot of Canadians that, you know, vacation down here a lot. So there is a huge hockey community here, and when... You know, when you lose a team, and a buddy of mine brought this up, and it's pretty accurate. We got 6 million people, and we're growing, and we're losing a professional sports team. That's not the best look.
What do you make of the, oh, but we'll give you an expansion team if you can build a building? Like, does anybody think a building is going to get built for an expansion team?
Well, so they have the auction on June 27th, and, you know, it's complicated. There's a lot of things to it, but the auction itself, we should have a pretty definitive answer by June 27th. You know, if Alex Morello gets that land and builds the arena on it, you know, I grew up in Seattle, and the Sonics were huge, and the Sonics left, and they were like, oh, you'll get a team back, and they still haven't gotten a team back. It's been 17 years, so I'm skeptical of that stuff. But what I will say in this case is Gary Bettman has been pretty committed to keeping a team in Phoenix, and there's a good, you know, 10, 12 really good players in the NHL now that grew up here in Phoenix watching the Coyotes. He drew a distinction on Friday between it just being an expansion team where you have to jump through a bunch of hoops, and it's just simply if you get the arena, you'll get your team back. I think he said reactivate your team. So I'm a little more optimistic on that than I would be under just a normal, hey, you know, maybe someday we'll come back through expansion. There's a more definitive, firm plan now.
Okay. We'll see. I don't know how many times it's got to fail and why you'd go back in with the same group that failed already, but I guess I'm all ears. They've tried Atlanta numerous times. Why not? Why not fire again in Arizona? We'll see where that goes from here. Marvin Harrison Jr., -240, the favorite to go number 4 to the Cardinals. Is that who Cardinal fans want, or do they want to take that pick and turn it into more picks?
Now, I think Cardinals fans want Marvin Harrison Jr. I find myself wanting Marvin Harrison Jr. too. For me, you can make an argument, certainly. If you can get a haul of picks, you've got more than one need, and that's true. But they already have 6 picks in the top 90, even if they just take Marvin Harrison Jr. So it's not like they urgently need more picks. And they do urgently need really a number 1 and number 2 receiver. They're not going to draft 2 receivers with, like, you know, the top 2 or 3 picks that they have, but they desperately need a player that is exactly like Marvin Harrison Jr. So for me, if they trade down, they better find a way to stay in a range where they can at least get Rome Odunze or Malik Nabers, because they already needed receivers, and they went into free agency and lost Hollywood Brown and traded Rondale Moore and didn't replace them.
Is this a statement that they're firmly behind Kyler Murray, or is this a make-or-break year for Kyler Murray?
I think to a certain extent, I think both things are kind of true. I think they're behind him, and they want him to be the guy, but this is a prove-it year for him because he hasn't played a full season with Jonathan Gannon or with Monty Ostafort running the team. But, you know, along those lines, if you're going to tell him he's got to prove it, his top 2 receivers cannot be Michael Wilson and Greg Dortch. All due respect to those 2 guys, they're really good pieces to have. But I think at this point in their careers, you're hoping they're like your 3 and 4 receivers. So you've got to get him some weapons if you're going to ask him to prove it.
All I heard about the matchup with the Timberwolves was that the Suns have their number. They own them right up until they played them in the playoffs and got spanked. What went wrong?
Yeah, I mean, there's some troubling signs there if you're the Suns, because you got out-rebounded so badly, 52-28, and that's probably not going to change over the course of the series. Hopefully it's not that lopsided. You know, Minnesota wins that game. Anthony Edwards wakes up. He was averaging 14 points a game during the regular season against the Suns. You knew he was going to go off. You were hoping if you're the Suns, maybe you could push that back to like game two or game three at least. The Suns all season long have been inconsistent and have gone both ways, where if there's a stretch of games they should win, they haven't necessarily done it. But then when they get back into a corner, they start playing better. So Minnesota's a good team. They had a better record, and that was without Karl-Anthony Towns for a good chunk of the season. But I think the Suns will bounce back here.
If they don't get by the Timberwolves, if they don't get past the first round, would that have them thinking, okay, this mix doesn't work?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question that people have been kind of quietly wondering and not wanting to really ask out loud here yet. But, yeah, I mean, if you spend the money they spent and you have the talent they have and you don't get out of the first round, I don't think they're going to, like, blow up the big three. I mean, you're never going to move Devin Booker. I don't think you would move Kevin Durant. That would seem kind of counterproductive. He's been really, really good, and he's played 75 games this season, plus now that playoff game. I don't know that you really could move Bradley Beal. I don't even think that's the right answer. But I do wonder about a guy like Frank Vogel if they don't get out of at least the first round.
Yeah. All right. We'll see where it goes from here. Luke Lipinski, great stuff as always there in Phoenix, Arizona. We appreciate it, buddy. Have a great week.
All right. You too. Take care.
Reggie Attitulo, 105.3 The Fan in Dallas, Texas is next. Reggie, how are you, sir?
Doing quite well. Yourself?
Doing very well. Thank you for asking. Tell me, what's going on? The Mavericks, the hottest team. Everybody's picked lookout. If anybody's going to make a run, it's the Mavericks. And then they fall flat on their face. What happened?
Shot making. Don't want to, you know, oversimplify, but if you were going to shoot so incredibly poorly, particularly your two star players that in a heliocentric offense like the one that they run, if those guys aren't knocking down shots, I don't know what you can expect to have happen. I don't anticipate that to be continually the case. Although shot making in like lowercase letters, I do think ends up being a little bit of a question over the course of the series with the other guys, right? The likes of PJ Washington, Dante Exum, even Tim Hardaway Jr., right? Those guys, the Clippers are going to be okay with allowing those guys to shoot. And over the course of the season, especially at the trade deadline when the team really switched its MO, those guys have been the guys that you go, I don't know if they make shots consistently enough, even if the percentages are there. Do they make them in the big moments? Do they make them with volume? They have at times, but you know, in the playoffs, it's a different level of pressure. Are those guys going to knock down shots? Ends up being a question. But Luka and Kyrie should be able to do significantly more. And you saw that late in the game, third, fourth quarter. Or they make shots, that game gets a lot different. So I think the big thing was that shot making early on.
What is at stake in this round of the playoffs? In other words, if the Mavericks lose, would they blow this up?
I don't think that they have the capability to blow this up, right? You've signed Kyrie Irving. Luka Doncic is obviously not a guy who ends up being moved. But this was a question when you kind of shot your shot at the trade deadline, went and got Daniel Gafford, went and got PJ Washington. You don't really have assets to make big changes. This is your core. Now, the good thing is a lot of this core is young. Daniel Gafford, 25. Derek Lively is 20 years old, right? You have a lot of young guys, but this is the core that you're working with. You're just going to have to wait and grow. The closest thing that I would get to, like, hey, maybe there's some level of question. Jason Kidd, he's coming up on his final season of his contract. But it really, honestly, I don't even think that's an issue because Luka likes him, Kyrie likes him, and he keeps those guys in good line and they follow him. I don't know that you get rid of a coach in that respect.
All right, let's talk about the Texas Rangers, their follow-up performance. Listen, they're in first place, but at just 12-11. What do we make of the Rangers at least beginning to their title defense?
We're holding steady. Nerves are starting to waver a little bit, but we're holding steady, right? Obviously, winning the first World Series championship in the team's history, that helps a good amount as well. But you knew that the offensive, or the rotation rather, wasn't going to be in a place that was great. You're waiting for your recovery, for your reinforcements, including Max Scherzer, who is killing his timeline on return. We're looking at sometime in mid to maybe even early May for him coming back and giving you support. The bullpen is a little shaky, which also isn't fun, But the thing that's really a problematic, or has been at least, is the slow start offensively. The offense is a thing that should be top five in the league, and you anticipate to carry them. That's been a little slow and inconsistent. That's been the frustrating part. And if that comes back to the place, I feel like you can kind of tread water as necessary. But they had a road stretch here where they still went 50% on the road, and that's something that you anticipate will keep you. If you can play 50% on the road and win your home series, you can be in a place where you still make the playoffs.
I know ESPN and Get Up in the mornings can't go 5 minutes without talking about the future of Dak Prescott and the Dallas Cowboys. I know it's the same way down in Dallas, but Dak says no fear of the future. What do we take from that comment?
I take him at his face value. I don't know that he should have fear of the future, because it seems like when it comes to the Cowboys and negotiations, ultimately the players win these things. We make a lot of noise about the conversation and the battle, and ultimately at the end of it, they give the contract. Now, the weird thing about that is, if you're the Cowboys, why are you waiting so long? And you might get to a place where it does not behoove him to sign a contract. He gets the free agency, and he could really run this thing up. But for all intents and purposes, all things point to the idea that that guy wants to be a Dallas Cowboy, and the Cowboys ultimately frequently cave in these situations. I don't have a lot of fears in that regard that something will get done at some point.
All right, and where do they go in the draft?
Well, they have not given themselves a lot of opportunities here. They've got to get an offensive lineman early. They need a running back. They need a linebacker. I would put good money on the idea that those are your first three picks. Not maybe in that order, maybe not necessarily, but lineman probably early on, likely tackle, probably Jonathan Brooks if we want to even put a particular name on him in the second round, and then linebacker. I would not be super surprised if you see those three.
There it is. Reggie Atitula in Dallas, Texas. Great stuff as always. We appreciate it. Have a great week.
Yes, sir. You too.
Colorado.
This is where we always find Mike Rice, KFKA, and MikeRiceSports.com. Mike, how are you, sir?
I'm well, Duren. How are you?
I'm good. Zach Wilson's no longer a Bronco, or is a Bronco. Excuse me, no longer a Jet. Is Denver rejoicing? Are they celebrating in the streets that they've now fixed the quarterback position?
You just can't let it go, can you? You're always the Jet. Rightly so. They're trying to find a little competition, I think, for Jarrett Stidham. I don't know if Sean Payton can resurrect Zach Wilson's career, if there's anything to resurrect to, if he can bring it forth, however you want to phrase it. I mean, he did wonders with Breeze after the labrum. He did wonders with Bridgewater. He did wonders with Kerry Collins, but... I mean, let's face it, Zach Wilson's been really bad. I'm not sure I would say rejoicing. They got to get – I would be stunned if they didn't come out of the draft with a young quarterback.
Is anybody rejoicing over these new Bronco uniforms?
I don't know about rejoicing. Most of the buzz that I've seen, at least on social media, is how much Broncos country likes the throwbacks, which everybody wants them to have the throwbacks be the full-time uniforms, if you will. I mean, look, they're fine. I went into it, Seren, saying I am not going to get worked up either way. They're not dreadful. They're not great. They're fine, in my opinion.
No, and it's nice of Boise State to give them their leftovers.
Yeah, but no blue turf. I promise that.
Yeah, good. That's hard to watch. All right. Will they make a move for a quarterback on draft day?
I think they'll try. I think they've probably been trying. The question is, you know, the teams at the top of the draft, assuming that Sean Payton loves one of those upper-tier quarterbacks, which you'd have to believe he would, but assuming that he does, I don't know if the Broncos have the wherewithal to get there, Seren, coming off the Russell Wilson situation, coming off of the trade for Sean Payton. I think they'll try. I'm not sure they're going to get there. And if they don't, I'd be okay with that, too, because the fact of the matter, this team has so many holes and so many needs that if they can get one of the quarterbacks that they think can be a guy a year or two from now, great. If you can't get to the top of the draft, they can't. They have to fill it down below with the quarterback and just get best player available. I'll say this. If they make the blockbuster move, they've got to be right, because you can't miss moving up into the top three or four, giving up what they'd have to give up.
A lot of buzz and a lot of sizzle instantly came to Colorado football when Deion Sanders was there. A lot of movement, right? A lot of motion. There's a difference between motion and progress, though. They won games early, ended up being a losing season. Oh, just wait, Deion said. And now we're seeing more people leaving, even now, still leaving, including a former five-star quarterback who said, don't want to be a part of any cliques. Where's the fear factor in Colorado that this actually isn't going to work?
I think the jury's still out, Seren. I really do. Honestly, I mean, you look at the movement, and in McClain's case in particular, remember, he got called out by Coach Prime during the season, like, show up to meetings, study your playbook, that kind of thing. So maybe the handwriting was on the wall. Maybe it wasn't a great fit. Maybe Cormani McClain didn't want to be coached the way Prime wants to coach those guys. I don't know. I think it's hard to get a read on it from the outside. I'll say this. You got to win. And the honeymoon was the first three games of last year. They won, one of their last seven or one of their last eight, whatever it was. They've got some guys coming in. Whether or not he can keep them long-term, is keeping them long-term even a thing in college sports anymore? I think, though, the jury's still out. I'm interested to see how things might be different in Boulder this year.
All right, the Nuggets don't deserve to play third fiddle on our list of topics in Denver, and really they should have been higher, but, you know, I can't resist the shot at the Broncos and Zach Wilson. So, but listen, is anyone, are they boring? Is everyone so just, you know, wake me when they get to the finals that they become boring?
Well, certainly I think in this first round against the Lakers, I mean, I don't know how much fear. There's a healthy respect for the fans. I'm not talking about the players and coaches. There's a healthy respect for what LeBron has been and what the Lakers have been in their past and all the rest. But right now, the Nuggets absolutely own the Lakers. I don't know why that would change, knock on wood, barring health in the playoffs. But assuming the Nuggets get by Los Angeles, I think it's a bit of a tougher road this year. So is it, you know, boring? Yes, when you have the best player in the world and you have a team that's defending champions and you're playing pretty well, you can take them for granted a little bit. But it's going to be an interesting playoff run because I think it would be tougher than what it would be last year should the Nuggets keep advancing.
Michael Porter Jr. was away from the team. It's a very difficult time for his family. One brother being convicted of a DWI and being sentenced to prison. His other brother being banned from the NBA for betting. Listen, I know that's a tragic, starting with the victim in the drunk driving accident, but just a horrible time for his family, and it's got to be very difficult for him to go through right now. I'm curious, is anybody questioning whether or not if Jonte is betting, well, I wonder if Michael is. Has that subject come up around Denver?
I really haven't heard it. And in fairness, that's a tough one to ask if you don't have some evidence, right? We all come across these situations covering sports where you better be a little bit careful. And I don't know. I mean, I haven't really heard that come up as a topic.
Yeah.
So, no.
Neither have I. But, I mean, what a distraction. I mean, distractions,
oh my gosh,
plural, for him as they're trying to defend a championship.
No question. And for him to be able to play the way he has this year while all that has been unfolding and developing and now sort of coming to a head in the two situations with his brothers is really remarkable. And he's been really good, Seren. He's been better than he ever has been. No question about that.
Mike, I know you've got to get down to the stuff store to get you a number two Wilson jersey. So we'll let you go. You're the best. We always appreciate it. Thanks so much for the time.
Hey, thank you, Seren. I'll get you. What's your size?
Big. Really big.
See ya.
Joe's Kansas City Barbecue. Burnt end of the hour answer. Not familiar with that song, so didn't know when the post
jump
was
in.
Hitting. And I walked on it.
No, you did fine.
Did I? It's a little early, usually. Hit it well before.
Would have been a lot more subtle if you didn't, like, slam on the brakes and scream, hey, look at this.
Hey, I don't mind.
When in doubt, don't mention it because we don't play it in the podcast anyway. So it,
because,
so
as
are,
we know,
yes,
society as we know it would cease
it would
to exist.
It would crumble.
It would.
If a tune played on a podcast.
Wait a minute. No one's taking those 2 pennies worth of playtime from us.
Millionaires didn't get every penny. Where would we be?
Better off, actually.
Probably so.
Figure out what side of the fence these guys are on.
Yeah. Dave Grohl used to do this. He used to rail against, like, Metallica because they were talking about Napster, and Grohl's like, dude, I get it, man. You know, you put money, you put work into it, you want to get paid, but, man, when you're making millions and millions of dollars and you're complaining about pennies,
I'll say this.
Blank you, man. Any food, the double birds. Blank you, man.
I think that Napster
the old Dennis
was
Miller show.
A right message, wrong messenger kind of thing. Because, like, if you're a band trying to make it who's not Metallica, that money might mean so. The streaming money might mean something to you. It's right message, wrong messenger. On a side note.
I actually think Dave Grohl's the right message.
No, I'm saying Metallica was the wrong messenger. Yeah. Dave Grohl, perfect.
Yeah, Dave Grohl's.
Because Dave Grohl's self-aware. He's like, nobody's ever going to feel sorry for freaking me.
Guy recorded an album in his garage. What are you talking about? The Rockies, first team to trail.
You know, for my money, I can't get enough talk about the Rockies.
First team to trail in each of their first 22 games since who?
The A's last year.
No, it goes back a little further than that.
The Cleveland Spiders.
Doesn't go back quite that far.
Not quite that far.
It's closer to last year's. Hang on.
So it's right in the middle.
No, it would be a little
I don't even
closer.
Know what year was the spot. Where were the Spiders?
1899. 20 and 134.
So the 60s-ish we're talking?
1957.
Was it the Guardians?
No, it was the Washington Senators who trailed at least at some point in each of their first 32 games in 1957. The Rockies have been behind at some point of the game in every game they've played this year. That is ugly.
Wow. It was the Royals didn't pull something like that last year.
Mm-mm. You would have thought maybe the 88 Orioles, who started 0-21, but even they led once or twice.
I mean,
or had it. Well, I guess the Orioles would have been 21. That's right, because they lost their first 21 games, so they would have certainly trailed in their first 21 games. But I think they came out in game 22 and.
And kicked ass.
Blew him out. Yeah.
No more of this.
That was.
You're not putting 22 in a row on us.
Nobody beats us 22 straight times, I'll tell you what.
Okay. Good to know. Playing for a little Joe's. Kansas City Barbecue. You can get some Joe's tonight on your way home. Joe'sKC.com. The best barbecue in the world is at Joe's. 47th and Mission, 119th and Strangline, and 117th and Row. Get you some Joe's tonight. Kansas City Barbecue Store. If you want to grill like the pros at Joe's, go to 119th and Strangline. Talk to the experts there. Sauces, rubs, utensils, the grill itself. Fuel, even the meat. It's at Joe's Wonderful Creation. It's called the Kansas City Barbecue Store. They're at 119th and Strangline Road. I will see you there this weekend.
I went to the KC Barbecue Store Saturday. I was out of my rub that I use for chicken and pork chops and stuff in my air fryer, and I wanted to find a good one. So I went out there. I was like, hey, I want something that's good all-purpose for chicken or beef or whatever, but isn't a barbecue seasoning. He goes, I got what you need. Put me right to the thing. Here's this. Try this. Went home, tried it. Fantastic. He said, there's a little ingredient you might not recognize at first, but.
What was it?
Green onion.
Okay.
Dried green onion. It worked fantastic. I used it on pork chops, and I used it on chicken yesterday. Fantastic. So that's the thing you get at that place, is that you don't just walk in, oh, here's a bunch of stuff. They do have every sauce and every rub you could possibly imagine. But if you ask them, hey, what do you suggest? They'll have an idea for you, which is, I think, in many cases more important than the product itself, knowing what to do. Because you're looking at a wall of 75 different brands. What do I do? What do you need? That's what you need. Buy that.
Yeah. No, they are the best.
Great place.
They are the best. 119th and Strangline, right across the parking lot from Joe's Kansas City. Barbecue is where you will find the Kansas City Barbecue Store. The Kansas City BBQ Store.com is where you'll find them online. A lot of draft talk.
You'll hear it in weeks like this.
Yes. And what was it? Wait a minute. There was something you wanted to hit. The new Matt Miller, Justin Reed?
Yes. Or is it Justin Reed?
No, it's Josh Reed.
Hang on. I'm going to go back to the top of the page. I think it's Jordan Reed.
Jordan Reed.
Yeah, Jordan Reed and Matt Miller have something that came out this morning. It's for each pick in the top in the first round. Jordan Reed picks the pick that fills the biggest need at that spot in their mock. And Matt Miller picks the pick that's the most value, maybe, in that spot.
Based upon
what the team
mock.
Needs.
Okay, and what's
yeah.
gone.
Yeah.
Okay.
So when you get to 32, Jordan Reed's pick that fills the big need is Adonai Mitchell, the wide receiver at Texas, who I don't think will be there at 32, but could be. And Matt Miller's pick that gets the best value, Ennis Rakestraw, the corner from Missouri.
Ooh.
Who I think is going to be in that area. Had some injury issues, and they point that out here. But maybe not the ideal physical measurables, but he'll lock you up. He's not afraid of the contact, and he's very much an in-your-face type of guy. And I watched him most of every week last year, and it was pretty clear that he was going to go to the next level. And I didn't think he'd be a fringe first-round pick, but that's where he is. The other Missouri corner, Chris Abrams, is probably going to be a second- or third-round pick. But people seem to love Rakestraw.
Yeah, and for good reason.
Yep.
Corner was one that was not at all on my radar screen other than, like, listen, if the best corner in the draft were sitting there for them at 32 and nine tackles are gone and six wideouts are gone, yes, I could see them taking corner, but that's the one that was the biggest. You know, there was a lot of interesting things Brett Beach said, like about the NIL and making the draft older in the later rounds. I thought that was interesting, but many interesting things. But the one that was like, he keeps mentioning corner.
Almost to the point where you're like, you know, the old line, thou doth protest too much or whatever. I think is he popping that out there? If it's subterfuge, then he might want to ease back a little bit, because this is the point where I think some people are going, he can't really, he's not being that upfront, is he?
I mean,
or does he just not care?
It seems like the old, like, oh, who was the biggest free agent they lost? Okay, that's the position they're going to draft. But, you know, like, we that class that was rookies are now going into their third year. And they're going to graduate a lot of them. So with an eye over the horizon.
Yeah, they're going to play football beyond 2026.
You know, maybe it was foolish to kind of breeze past it. Thinking, oh, well, this time they're going to sign some. Well, if they're not going to sign any corners ever, then they're going to lose a bunch of them here in a couple of years.
I think the thought is, the hope was, from a fan perspective at least, and maybe the thought is from an analyzing perspective, is he's found, other than McDuffie, he's found such great value at corner in later rounds that, yeah, they'll eventually go get a corner, but it won't be in the first round. It'll be third, fourth, or fifth. But, I mean, if the guy's there, he also has shown that he'll move up for a guy. The idea was that they didn't, it wasn't as pressing a need because McDuffie was so good, and because they were so successful with their later round picks 2 years ago, that there really wasn't an urgent need. But it's going to be an urgent need fairly soon, and I don't think you can just count on finding the same value you found in 2020 that you know in 2025 or whatever.
Yeah, I'm pretty intrigued by where they're going to go, because if they're looking at it like, man, we thought we had one need, it was tackle. Now the Rashee Rice, we have two. I'm going to be pretty intrigued by not only the draft, but then what happens about Tuesday of next week.
Mm-hmm.
Like, are they signing Donovan Smith back?
Right.
Where are they going?
Yeah, so much of that. We get to the end of Sunday, and you think, okay, this is who it's going to be. And then the recent years have shown that that's not necessarily the case. You have to wait at least a week later and see what are the kind of signings are made.
I would like to see them pull off some kind of, you know, I like, if they got my guy, my Yale offensive tackle.
Mm-hmm. Sulamataya.
Is that, you'd be better at it than me.
Yeah.
No, that's not him.
That's not him.
Sulamataya was BYU.
That's right. Yale is
Kieran Omegaji.
Yeah, Omegaji. I always get those two mixed up.
If they get him late second round, and have Donovan Smith, like, mentor him, and he gets 1 year's apprenticeship to try to step in there, because it's a big jump from Yale, and take a wideout early, I'll feel pretty good. But I like the one thing you can't do is be like, oh, we're drafting all offense, or oh, we're drafting all. You got to always be trying to replenish both sides mm-hmm. of the ball. And so, D line, corner, wide out, tackle. I mean, we've kind of identified what the needs are, and shockingly, even though they're taking best player available, the needs seem to come off the board in order.
Right.
Do you think the possibility, maybe you can say probability, but at least the possibility of Donovan Smith being a safety net takes away how high they might be willing to trade up for a left tackle?
No, I think Veach's passion for his guy, his willingness to trade up, and he's always been very open about that. He's a trade-up guy. I give his guys there. He's going to go get him. I think it's a safety net is what it is. It might be the plan either way, but you just like, if it is the plan, why hadn't it happened? Unless it's just a matter of, all right, let's get the draft done, and then we got to restructure some stuff. Now we got room for you. All right, come on back. But I can see Donovan Smith being at a point where it's like, I'll play for the Chiefs or like some other really good team, or I won't play at all. I can also see him being like, I'm never playing in a game that cold again. So I'm playing for the Dolphins or the Bucks or someplace warm. Because, John Elway talked about when he went down and played in the Super Bowl, he's like, well, I've not seen what it's like playing down here in Miami all the time. Now I know why Dan wants to keep playing. I'd be playing longer as well. As opposed to playing in the cold all the time in Denver. I think for older guys.
Got a couple of rings. Seemed like, do I want to go for a third ring? Do I want to go play somewhere where I enjoy myself?
I can't believe they're set with Wanya Morris.
No. That doesn't ring true.
And when they drafted last year, Juwan Taylor was the starting left tackle.
Yes, that's forgotten.
And right tackle
was
a competition.
Lucas Niang.
Lucas Niang.
A number of bodies. Do you kick Trey Smith out there? And nope.
Yeah. So, I think it'll be tough for him to sit there. That's why Adam and I put the trade up, but I don't think it's going to be very – they're not going to be trading up that far.
The fact that they've won three Super Bowls with six different starting tackles is interesting. But I don't know how much of that you factor that into – if you could just get decent guys at the corners, we can win with that.
They've done it in spite of
– Yes.
Consistency. I don't want to say in spite of the left tackle or the tackles, because I think they've had good guys.
Yeah.
They're all being paid a lot of money.
Yeah, the first pair was Pro Bowl and an All-Pro.
Right.
And Fisher and
Schwartz. And then, last year, 2 years ago's pair, both got paid in free agency.
Yep.
And Donovan Smith's unsigned, but Juwan Taylor's making a lot of money. So, I'd like to see a tackle. Since Juwan Taylor's not going anywhere, I'd like to see that streak end.
Yes. I agreed. If they win it again with two different guys, something's gone wrong and they've overcome it.
913-3810-810, you're in the program. Tyreek Hill's back at it. We'll get into that with our need to know. You need to know Tyreek Hill is not over the Chiefs. Chiefs fans and the Kansas City Chiefs seem to be over Tyreek Hill.
Mm-hmm.
But he is definitely not over the Chiefs.
No, still some thoughts. Still gets him in the feels.
If you like having a spell over someone, Chiefs fans know.
Congratulations.
You have that.
I got to tell you, it's easy for me to just sit there and say this now, but if I got $100 million, if I went to work at a new place and I got $100 million for working there, I like you guys. I'd still keep in touch with you guys and say hi to our things. How's the family? Blah, blah, blah. This place, I like it here. Wouldn't be on my mind that much. I like it here. $100 million is $100 million, though.
Yeah. Come on. It's what you wanted was the money and the contract.
Yeah. He's been disrespected.
Oh, we'll hear more from him a little bit later on. Give you the names of the tackles that I think if the Chiefs draft an offensive tackle, who I think it'll be, what their names are.
Yes.
Would you like to know?
I would like to know that.
Who you have to keep an eye on?
I don't
on?
Need to know that. That's next. But I would like to know. This will be like to know. The things you'd like to know.
Where's my... Here it is. Okay. You need to know the name. I think these names. J.C. Latham at Alabama. Right? I think they could take him.
Yeah.
I definitely need to know Amarius Mims at Georgia. 36-plus-inch arms. Patrick Paul at Houston. Also 36-plus-inch arms at almost 6'7.5". I think he's a possibility. And my guy, Omega G from Yale. Mm-hmm. And then who was the other one? I'm missing one. Going through my... Well, I'll tell you this. Later rounds, Walter Rouse, Ethan Driscoll, Joseph Ezram of Eastern Kentucky. If you see the Chiefs take them, it's because they've got 35-plus-inch arms, and arm length is one of their, you know, gotta have. It's one of the reasons why when we were talking about it with Adam Teicher earlier, if you missed that, it's on the podcast, 3 o'clock hour. I think there are guys that just, like, if you look, you know, 32 and change arms, you're not getting drafted by the Chiefs. You're not even on their board. They're not even going to take you. Yep. There are some prerequisites you got to have.
All right, with at least 1,500 at-bats, two players have a .300 career batting average for the Toronto Blue Jays. Name either one. Brought to you by Good Sense.